And we'll be back in a moment with Richard C. Hoagland and Dr. John Brandenburg this hour. Later on, we'll take your phone calls as well as we talk about this historic night, the landing of the Mars Curiosity. Dr. Brandenburg has written books called Life and Death on Mars and Beyond Einstein's Unified Field. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And Dr. John Brandenburg is a plasma physicist. He did his graduate work in California at Lawrence Livermore National Lab in controlled plasmas for fusion power. How about that? And has worked in defense, energy, space research. He's also part of the Clementine mission to the moon that discovered water on the moon's poles. However, the focus of Dr. Brandenburg's scientific career has been to complete the great effort of Einstein to unify the two long-range forces of nature, gravity, electromagnetism as well. He's with us on this exciting night tonight, John. It's one of the few exciting nights in space I can remember.
I know. It's a great moment, and it's really exciting. And I want you to remember, by the way, that in the late 70s, Mars was considered a dead has-been planet.
That's right.
But by the time of about 1990, after 10 years of the Cydonia controversy and the loss of the Mars Observer and the discovery of the Mars meteorites, Mars suddenly became red hot.
And that Cydonia guy, one of them, and one of the main guys, Richard C. Hoagland, absolutely, who's going to give us a quick update, too. Go ahead, Richard.
Yeah, guys, let me give you an update out of JPL. They're going to have a press briefing on Curiosity in about 5 minutes. And if I know JPL, it may be 20. I'm at that point going to duck away. For a few minutes, I'm going to keep one ear on you guys talking.
All right.
If I want to interrupt, I will. But I want to basically make sure that I'm on top of what's happening, because the next opportunity now that we're going to have for some really amazing data is with the flyover of Odyssey at 12:30 Pacific in about an hour and a half. And that means that we could get more pictures, including a color picture. We got a lot more black and white pictures up on the board, and that's with the covers on. If you know anything about this spacecraft, John, this thing has 17, count them, 17 cameras. Not one, George, not two, but 17. And the HazCams, or the hazard cameras, which are basically to keep the engineers from driving this thing off a cliff, they're located on the body of the beast, at the base of this kind of rectangular shell, and the cameras they were giving us before they lost the Odyssey link when it went over the hill were from the rear cameras mounted back by the nuclear power pile, and and they have these optical covers that are like transparent little pop-up things that they'll pop off in the next 24 hours or so, but they took their first pictures through the dust covers. Now, you might say, well, why would you take a lousy picture on Mars? First picture, you land safely, you take a picture, and you take it through the dust cover. Why would you do that? Because they wanted to see how much dust would stick to the cover and know what the transparency is shooting through the plastic at Mars through the dust. And it looks like there wasn't much dust at all, which, of course, is telling you something about the history of the site and the geology.
And, Dick, you know that We Cydonia people and JPL have had our differences in the past, but we have to salute them today.
Well, look, we always said there are two parts of NASA. There's the honest folks that are 99%.
Yeah, absolutely.
The ones that you and I know, the ones that work their hearts out, the ones that work overtime, the ones that lose marriages because they're so dedicated to what they see as the only way to save the human race, which is to get us into space big time.
Right.
And then there's the sneaky you-know-whos, who have concealed everything, manipulated their own people, told a lot of lies about those of us outside trying to, you know, wake the system up and get the truth out. And it's the honest folks we're celebrating tonight, and all those happy people in those blue T-shirts, they deserve every ounce of credit
because
they have pulled off an extraordinary miracle, a technological United States of America miracle.
Absolutely.
Once
makes
again tonight.
Me so proud to be an American, and I would have loved to have been standing there on the Mars surface seeing this thing coming in. That would have been
oh my gosh, it would have been gorgeous. And now we have done this, John, with 2012 technology.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, landing on the moon, we did it with old 1960s technology, and we did it. But now we're starting to show people what you can do with real technology.
Actually, as that great line in Independence Day, Mr. President, it's not exactly true. Actually,
yes, Will.
Some of the technology tonight was from the 1960s. The autonomous guided landing, where Curiosity, its computer with its IMU, its inertial measurement unit, was rolling that aeroshell back and forth, changing the lift angle, the lift vector. That came directly out of the reentry profile for the Apollo spacecraft that was flown by all the Apollo astronauts to guide themselves within a mile or so of the aircraft carrier in the Pacific Ocean.
No kidding.
So all they did was take the software, John, updated it with algorithms that were computer compatible with today's software and hardware, put it in this computer, and so it flew, George, an Apollo landing profile to this landing on Mars tonight.
And so will the human landing, American human landing on Mars.
Yeah. See, nothing in space or in technology or in science is ever wasted. You build on, as Newton said, you know, if I've seen farther, it's because I stand on the shoulders of giants.
Absolutely.
That's what we're doing tonight. We're standing on the shoulders of John Glenn and all those engineers, those half a million Apollo people, you know, James Webb, John Kennedy himself, who had this vision that this was what we had to become, a spacefaring nation. And it all came to an extraordinary climax as part of a series over the next several months tonight with this successful, amazing successful landing and the beginnings of what I think is going to be a total change in what we think of as what it's like to be on Mars.
Well, I'm certainly hoping, Dick, but I'll also tell you, and I sent a map to you guys showing where the methane concentrations are. Remember the methane?
That's right.
Yeah. They landed as far away from it as they could.
But it doesn't matter, because the Mars atmosphere blows things all the way around, and the sensitivity, remember, it's all about signal to noise.
Well, I know.
You would think, though, that they would land in a methane patch.
Well, hang on. That would have been the operative idea if your objective was to go and find microbes on Mars.
Well, isn't that it?
If you want to look at rocks and interesting strata.
John, if your objective is to land,
yes,
to and explore an incredible, vast, ancient archaeology, which is what I think Mount Sharp really is sitting there in Gale Crater, a
yes,
collapsed archaeology.
Yes.
Because one of the things this rover is equipped with, which no other spacecraft has ever been equipped with, George, it's got headlights. Now, hang on a second. Why, since you're not driving at night and you're sitting and doing science and you're only driving during the day and you take your pictures and send them home, why do you need headlights at night?
Good
question.
You think
they're going to go into some caves?
They're going into the structure where they don't have any light, no sunlight, but you want light so you can take pictures. And, of course, you couldn't use solar panels if you're going inside an archaeology. You need nuclear power, which doesn't care whether you're in a building or outside. Look, there's a hidden agenda, and as we go through the morning, I'm going to lay out more data points, carefully researched, so I don't sound like a total idiot, because people can go and confirm this themselves. Now, whether they interpret the data the same way, that's up to them. But the data is there that this is the mission that's going to break the doors down and start, I'm going to use the D word,
if they decide to do that.
Is this going to be the catapult, John, to get us really rolling into Mars, this mission?
It could be. It has that potential. I think it's an election year, and I'll try not to sound too political. I think the present administration does not like manned space flight and missions to Mars. But this mission is going to last a long time.
Yeah.
And they're going to find a lot of interesting stuff. I just know it. And I believe they will advance the whole idea. Every time we land on Mars safely, we show that how we will do it with human beings. And so I'm excited, and I do believe this mission will be absolutely historic.
Is this going to be a political kick for this administration?
Oh, well, absolutely. I mean, the every time you have a success, especially this is good news. We haven't had a lot of it lately. And so, of course, this will reflect well on the administration, and it should.
Well, keep in mind, if my projections are right, and I'm going to get political because that's obviously where the rubber meets the road. Without politics, you don't have missions like this.
That's right.
Politics
without John Kennedy, you wouldn't have had us on the moon.
Exactly. So we have to talk about the politics. I have been watching a trail of breadcrumbs coming out of the White House And this press conference is just about to start. So let me give you this thought, and then I'll go away for a few minutes.
Okay, and we're going to pop up a little bit of this news conference, too, Richard, on the air once they get going here.
Anyway, I've been watching a trail of breadcrumbs that this is the mission, John, where the Obama administration is going to create or claim or announce an October surprise just before the election. I would say late October. And I think that projection is they're going to announce the methane ratios indicate in all likelihood life on Mars. Now, as I've said on this show, for this audience, the Coast family, it'll be a kind of a ho-hum moment because we're looking at much bigger implications of intelligence and technology and ancient civilizations and all that in the solar system. But, by the way, the mission people coming into the JPL Auditorium, Von Karman, are getting a standing ovation
from the press
and the employees. Absolutely, totally warranted. These are amazing people. They've done an amazing job, and they're at the threshold of amazing, I think, revelations and discussions and discoveries if the politics get in line. Final thought. If I'm right, look toward late October, the announcement of methane means maybe microbes, and that will completely change.
I agree. That's certainly a possibility.
As we watch this, Richard, with the sound of the news conference, it's as if you're in the back room there with them.
You've got a front row seat.
let's listen in to them, John. We're going to come back to you in a second.
Sure.
Richard's going to go and take some notes as we're watching this live press conference.
Welcome to Mars. I mean, to NASA. About an hour and a half ago, I went outside and looked toward the west, and I saw Mars there, and I said, in an hour and a half, you are going to have a visitor. And the planet smiled, and I knew that we were going to have good luck. So with this, I want to introduce you our fearless leader, Charlie Bogan.
Boy, I tell you.
He's the head of NASA here.
Charles, thanks very much. First of all, just let me say thanks very much to the entire team and all the teams not here. Some of the teams in places like Canberra, Australia, and up in Goldstone, because the Deep Space Network was what made it possible for us to be getting all the data and everything. So, you know, but today, right now, the wheels of Curiosity have begun to blaze the trail for human footprints on Mars. Curiosity, the most sophisticated rover ever built, is now on the surface of the Red Planet, where it will seek to answer age-old questions about whether life ever existed there on Mars, or if the planet can sustain life in the future. This is an amazing achievement, made possible by a team of scientists and engineers from around the world and led by the extraordinary men and women of NASA and our Jet Propulsion Laboratory. Nothing in robotic planetary exploration is harder, more technically challenging, or as risky as landing on the surface of Mars. And I know most of you are saying, how can he be saying that? It just looks so easy. Trust me. Historically, counting all the missions by all countries, the odds of success are about 40%. The recent U.S. record is better, with now six successful missions, including now four landings. And I'm going to stray from my script here for a moment, which is always dangerous. But tonight, and I'm probably not going to include all the countries, but tonight there are at least four countries, and I won't name them, who are on Mars. And they're on Mars because they went with the United States. So I know this may sound a little strange in this international environment, but I want everyone to understand what I say and what I mean when I say, you know, our leadership is going to make this world better. Tonight, as incredible as our feat was tonight, we just succeeded one more time in raising the bar even higher. New technologies never invented or attempted before were created for this incredible journey. Curiosity's final descent was dubbed 7 minutes of terror because in its 7-minute trip to the surface, it had to slow down from 13,000 miles an hour to zero. And I think you've heard this before. That's like driving 65 miles an hour on a freeway and coming to a complete stop in about 2.1 seconds. Hundreds of other things had to go just right, including a parachute slowdown at supersonic speed, 8 rocket engines to power a final descent, and final soft landing by a new SkyTrain landing system. Curiosity will spend the next 2 years seeking answers to one of humanity's oldest questions as it investigates whether conditions have favored development of microbial life on the red planet. President Obama has laid out a bold vision for sending humans to Mars, and today's landing marks a significant step toward achieving this goal. And now it's my pleasure to introduce to you a very dear friend of mine. He is the President's Science Advisor, the Director of the Office of Science and Technology Policy, and a guy who was sweating through this. And as he told me a little while ago, he thought he was going to throw up at one point. And he's probably mad because I told you that. But my friend, Dr. John Holdren.
I wanted to start by saying thank you for sharing that, Charlie. Well, today on Mars, history was made on Earth. The successful landing of Curiosity, which is, as Charlie has said, the most sophisticated roving laboratory ever sent to another planet, marks what is really an unprecedented technological tour de force. It will stand as an American point of pride far into the future. It's also just the latest example of a long-standing truth about the United States, that even the longest of odds are no match for America's unique blend of technical acumen and gutsy determination. And that's certainly for all of the folks at JPL, at Caltech, at NASA, and our partners whose instruments, as Charlie has pointed out, were on this this lander. Thanks, big thanks are due to all of them. Our continued preeminence and progress in space and here on Earth in other domains such as biomedicine and healthcare, clean energy, national security, advanced manufacturing, all of this depends on our continuing commitment to science, technology, and innovation, and the passion for adventure that has driven us to explore new worlds. By sustaining our investments in basic research and exploration, we ensure that America will remain at the forefront of the scientific frontier. So I really want to personally congratulate, on behalf of myself, but also on behalf of my boss, President Obama, the team here at JPL, at NASA, and around the country that contributed to this spectacular achievement. I can only imagine what incredible data and new understandings are going to be uncovered in the coming days, months, and years because of this success.
Yes, you're listening to a NASA news conference with regards to the complete landing of the Mars Curiosity. Dr. John Brandenburg with us, Richard C. Hoagland taking notes, so he'll have a report for us here. This is exciting. I assume, John, they expected this kind of success.
They've gotten very good at landing on Mars now. This is, I believe, the sixth successful landing. The first two Viking landers were successful. Then the original little Mars rover, the very small one, then the two Mars rovers, then the polar lander, and now this. It's a very exciting day to be an American. And it must be also remembered that these accomplishments actually, you know, raise our stature in the world on Earth.
I think so, too. And overshadowed by this tragedy in Wisconsin today, shooting at the Sikh temple. But you know, technology moves on, John, and we're showing the world we've got it.
Right. And but I also want to point out that, Dick Hoagland began the independent Mars investigation team.
He sure did.
And working, you know, capitalizing on the work of Vince DiPietro and Greg Molinar, their excellent imaging work. And before long, that face in Cydonia was more recognizable than George Washington on the dollar bill.
It sure was.
Combined with, as I discuss in my book, Life and Death on Mars, that combined with the discovery of the Mars meteorites, this made Mars from being a dead has-been planet by the 70s.
Let's talk, John.
Red hot and smoking.
Let's talk about that red hot and smoking when we come back. How much life you think was on Mars and how much we might have right now. We're going to also come back with your phone calls with Dr. John Brandenburg and Richard Hoagland. And we're going to take your phone calls in a moment when we come right back to get your reaction to the Mars Curiosity and some other questions you've got. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. We're going to take your calls. Richard C. Hoagland with us, Dr. John Brandenburg. Richard, in this news conference, when Charles Bolden, the NASA administrator, said that four other countries had joined us on Mars, but he wasn't going to name them, why not?
Well, I don't think there's a pecking order and an ego problem if you name them in the wrong sequence. You know, those that have done more, those that have done less. He's basically setting it up that more countries will want to join in us doing these kinds of things. And I want to tell you, I haven't been able to watch the press conference yet because it hasn't started. It's been nonstop pandemonium in the Von Karman Auditorium since I left you. There are people applauding and cheering and guys coming in and waving and high-fiving. And now
it's a pep rally.
It's basically a pep rally for the United States of America.
Very good.
Indeed. Well, you keep monitoring that for us, Richard, and give us the information while you're here. We're going to take calls in a moment with both of you. Dr. John, we've talked about Mars. How alive was Mars? How alive is it now?
I think there is a faint shadow of a biosphere left on Mars. But Mars at one time, I believe, had a thriving biosphere as extensive as that on Earth. And, of course, this was Mars climate changed, I think, catastrophically. At least that's the proposal I make in the book, the hypothesis. Due to an asteroid impact at a place called Leo Impact Crater. This is big as Chicxulub, except that it happened on a planet only half the size of, one quarter of the surface area of Earth and getting only half the sunlight. So on Earth, when we got the big Chicxulub impact, it wiped out 90% of Earth life. Earth's biosphere recovered from this terrible wound, but on Mars, the wound was mortal because Mars apparently needed a large CO2 greenhouse to actually have the conditions where it could have an ocean and Earth-like conditions. Mars used to have an ocean covering about a quarter of the planet, and it was to stabilize the climate. And also, of course, if you have liquid water, that basically defines Earth conditions.
Were they as deep in some areas of that ocean as we have on planet Earth?
It was fairly shallow compared. It was about the deepest point was maybe it's about 3 kilometers deep.
Okay.
About mile and a half. Most Earth oceans are deeper than that.
Sure.
And of course, the Earth is bigger and has a bigger ocean, but it did the job, and coupled with a big CO2 greenhouse, as you know, climate is much more temperate than a climate inland because the ocean keeps heat. It stays warm at night and it stays cool during the day. And this would act as a big stabilizer on the. It was a big kind of like a flywheel on an engine, keeping the Mars thermal engine running. And then you had a big CO2 greenhouse, which established enough pressure to keep liquid water and also trapped a lot of heat. It was a persistent greenhouse, just like we have on Venus. So all of those created the possibility of life on Mars, just like on Earth. Mars and Earth basically began with the same sort of climatic conditions. And then I believe they evolved similarly, with Mars having a lot of life, just like Earth got a lot of life. It had an oxygen. Turns out if you add oxygen to the CO2 atmosphere, it stabilizes the CO2, so it doesn't form carbonic acid and combine with the rocks. So it chemically stabilizes it, and you get an ozone layer. And pretty soon you have just a thriving planet. It probably had an oxygen atmosphere and a thriving biosphere earlier than Earth because it cooled off quicker. And you have you continue this, and then something happens to end it, and we think we found the big impact crater at a place called Leo. It's spelled Liat. It's the French pronunciation, it's Leo. And this was the Chicxulub of Mars and probably destroyed its climate, so it couldn't recover. Then something very strange also seems to have happened on Mars. There seems to have been a very large nuclear event. And
Like a collision?
No, one hypothesis I put forth at a planetary science meeting was that this was a natural nuclear reactor. On Earth, you had natural nuclear reactors in Africa. I proposed a much larger one on Mars that then had gone unstable and blown up, basically disassembled. And you can find a big radiation scar on Mars from the gamma ray spectrometers. And if you look at maps of radioactive potassium on Mars that are online, and also thorium on Mars, you'll find that there's a great red spot on Mars. And interestingly enough, Cydonia is in between the great asteroid impact, Leo crater, and also if you go farther west, then you'll find this radioactive hot spot. And this is all discussed, of course, in the book Life and Death on Mars. And I knew I hit a nerve because not only did the U.S. government denounce my hypothesis from Livermore Lab, using a mouthpiece from Livermore Lab, but also the Russian government denounced my
Richard has a question for you.
Sure. John, are you aware that this spacecraft, Curiosity, carries a specific suite of radiation detection instruments?
No, I was not aware of that.
Very similar to what we discussed 20-some years ago during the Mars,
Independent Mars investigation.
Investigation of Cydonia, because you and I were comparing notes, and I said, and you said, you kind of concurred that some of these things, these craters, did not look like impact craters; they looked like nuclear bomb craters.
Well, they came in strings, and some people commented, "Looks like bombing."
Interesting is if you read the press release carefully, they repeatedly talk about the radiation measurements they're going to be doing over the next several years on Mars.
Yes, I do remember that.
And part of that, of course, has to do with looking at the natural radiation for human beings.
Yes.
But they're stressing to the point of almost absurdity. It's almost Shakespearean. You know, I think he does protest too much. They keep stressing natural radiation. And, of course, that instantly leaped out at me on the page because I'm a writer and writers kind of resonate with things like that. Why, under the standard NASA assumption that Mars is dead, that there's never any living beings there, there's been no cities, no civilization, no nuclear war, why would you keep reassessing and re-stressing that Curiosity is going to be measuring natural radiation? Wouldn't that be assumed? So I obviously think that they're basically telling us between the lines they're looking at evidence of what you and I discussed all those years ago.
That's right.
Was there a huge nuclear war, a catastrophic ending of the Mars civilization in nuclear catastrophe of some kind?
Yes.
And is Curiosity basically looking to see what isotopes have been left over, which will give them a way to date when the war could have occurred?
And they will be able to do that.
Let's take some calls, gentlemen. Let's go to Sean, truck driving in New Jersey. Sean, you're on with all of us. Go ahead.
Hey, how's it going? How's
good,
it
Sean.
Going?
Good.
Well, it couldn't be better, John, unless you want to bring the champagne.
Hey, I want to first say congratulations to NASA because, you know, I mean, that's a very big accomplishment.
That sure is.
When we were listening to that news conference, a piece of it, I would have sworn at first that the guy was listening to Coast because, you know, it was almost like word for word what you guys were saying before. You know, we went over to it.
They might have been.
Yeah, and also while I was sitting here waiting, I just had a thought. You know, I don't know how you guys feel about that whole Roswell thing, but I was thinking, you know, maybe they came from Mars, you know, like the survivors of this whatever happened there way back when, you know, just like here on Earth, we would have plans to go underground if need be to survive, you know, keep the race alive. You know what I mean?
Sure.
That could have been. I'm sorry. What?
I said, John, that's a very interesting scenario because one of the things that happens when you have intense radiation is you have mutations.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at grays, you know, they're bipedal. They have arms and legs and, you know, look kind of like us, except they're dwarfs. They're small.
Right.
And they look like
the orcs from Middle Earth.
They actually could be the survivors, mutated survivors of some kind of radiation damage. So nothing is out of bounds. The idea is, this spacecraft is carrying tools to finally begin to test the things that John and I talked about 30 years ago in the independent Mars investigation.
That's right.
It's astonishing.
Hey, let me take one step further before you guys toss me out. my one other point to it is that, you know, for all you know, maybe they came here saying, hey, look, we got people still there living underground.
Maybe so.
For all these years, it could have been progressive. And I'm just throwing it out there. Don't give me, you know, don't get to think I'm crazy or anything.
I don't think you're crazy at all, John.
It's more likely than 2 light years or 3 light years or 4 light years, wouldn't you say?
Well, remember, you cannot really tell artificiality in the present tense from orbit. If there's no lights on the surface and there's no electronic radiations, there could be a huge underground complex inhabited by somebody, and you'd never know with what we put on Mars up till now. This mission could be the change.
Will we be seeing live picture transmissions, Richard, or will they editorialize?
Well, it's the bandwidth. You can't have live because there's too much bandwidth and it's 14 light minutes away.
Yeah,
but you can have quasi-live. For instance, when they get all the cameras up and running, remember, 17 cameras, and they raise the mast on this thing tomorrow, which has some of the super high-res cameras. They've got a telescope which can magnify, you know, 10 times on this thing. They've got laser cameras. They've got the color camera that's on the actual remote manipulator arm that we may actually get a picture from in the next pass in about 45 minutes. We may get quasi-real-time imaging depending upon the width of the soda straw. Remember, good pictures are megabytes, and even at max, the ability to send imagery back to Earth is limited to kilobytes, so it's about bandwidth. So you have to send the pictures, store them, and then present them within, you know, a couple hours of receiving them. Under normal conditions, that would be very suspicious. Again, politically, I'm seeing lots of data points, including the president, science advisor John Holdren, present at JPL. Remember, everybody in the press knew he was there before this thing landed successfully.
Right.
If he had been there and it crashed, then the White House and Obama would have taken a terrible hit, even though he had nothing to do with this mission because it was commissioned years ago and was en route by the time he was president. So the idea that he was there, very visible. To me, I'm watching the politics more than the science in the next few days because the politics will tell us, John, whether this is going to be the beginning of what we have been absolutely demanding for 30 years, which is openness, disclosure of what's there, or business as usual, where NASA hides all the good stuff and the American people who paid for it never get to see it.
Well, Dick, I agree with you. It's a political watch as much as a scientific watch.
Now, let me give you, before we lose you, because we got about, 8 minutes, George?
Yep.
let me tell you some political data points. Last year, last Christmas, the White House put out an official White House Christmas card from the Obamas. You know, Michelle, Barack, the kids, the dog, Bo. They put out
beautiful
this Christmas
family
card set in the White House library, where no one has ever put out a Christmas card before or since. And it wasn't traditional. It didn't have a Christmas tree. It didn't have Christmas cards. It had some presents on a table lit very curiously. And on the blinds on the side of the library, remember, libraries mean ancient knowledge in symbolic terms.
Yes.
On this set of blinds on the side of the room filled with a glowing fire, the dog Bo sleeping in front of the fire,
probably
you've got this symbol on the blinds, and the symbol is the logo for the Curiosity Mars mission.
How about that?
Go and look at the White House website. Pull it up. It's also on Enterprise. It's also on my Facebook pages. Just, you know, scroll down through their new timeline to December of last year, and you will see this amazing mimic of the Curiosity logo from the Obama White House with unopened Christmas presents on the table around looks like a poinsettia plant with glowing red flowers, and the presents are unopened, and there are two chairs by the table which have no one in them. It's like someone is expected.
Some kind of psychodrama going.
It's like a Beatle album.
Paul. It's like, is George actually dead and they haven't told
him?
Would the White House have the Curiosity logo on its window blinds in the library?
Great message. Boston, Mass. Skype line we go. Joe, go ahead.
Yeah.
Hi,
Joe. Got through. Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, I just, wow, just, it's incredible getting through. I've been a Coast member for about a year now, Joy.
Thank you, Joe.
Listening to Richard, my God, I mean, just talking to you guys on this night is incredible. I wanted to say two things. One to you, George. A couple months back, you just real quick, not to get off topic, but you made a comment about a lot of paranormal, you know, investigators popping up. But you have to realize, listening to your show, that's going to happen. You're going to spurn a lot of people like myself.
Sure.
Take my personal experiences and go out there and try to get answers, just like, you know, you guys do every day.
Right.
I just want to thank you guys, you know, just with having an incredible show.
And you're welcome.
An incredible impact on me.
Oh, wow. I'll mention, I got a great quote for you guys from Shelley Thompson. She says that we're taking too long to find extraterrestrial life, seeing as it's already found us.
Yeah, it sure has. Are you, you a believer in visitation here, John?
Or I'm you afraid I am, yes.
You are.
Well, it's a big universe out there, and we're just one little speck of dust.
When a PhD plasma physicist can believe we're being visited from extraterrestrials, that's a pretty big story.
Yeah, well,
John's not just an ordinary plasma physicist. John's been in on the ground floor.
That's
what
right.
I think is going to ultimately wind up being the most important investigation of life on Mars. And all we have to do, George, is be a little more patient, because this could be the year.
Let's go to Amarillo, Texas. Susan, east of the Rockies. Go ahead, Susan.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Hello.
Since I was 13 years old, this has been the most exciting thing I've ever seen.
Isn't this something?
However, during the press conference, if it had not worked, I doubt we'd have seen Obama's representative. His interest in the space program has been waning, and all of a sudden, there's his space and science technology guy. And my second question is, whatever happened to Homer Hickam from the movie October Sky? He worked on the space shuttle.
Yep.
I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you, you guys.
Well, you're welcome,
great.
Susan. Well, he's right. If it went down in defeat today, I'm sure we wouldn't have had the science advisor there.
George, success has many fathers.
It sure does.
Well, but in the real world, when all the press is there and they've been mingling with him in the halls, you can't very well hide. I mean, it was known this afternoon he was there. So it's not like he just suddenly came out and nobody...
Yeah, but I mean, he might not have publicly said anything.
Well, he wouldn't... Well, he probably would have had to have stood up, because remember, politics is all about perception.
He might have waved in the back or something.
I think this was a very high-wire act, and I would disagree with the lady who just called. You cannot predict what's going to happen in the future based on the past. We are living in a non-linear age. John can attest to this. There are many systems in physics where everything's going along fine, 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 or bad, 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 and suddenly you get a discontinuity where everything suddenly changes.
Everything changes.
That's what I think is going to happen. I think we've looked at prologue. We've looked at game playing. We've looked at marking time. Remember that old Orson Welles, cliche, make no wine before it's time. I think it's time.
You think it's time for Martian wine to go on sale?
It's time for Mars to be revealed, and it's time for this White House. Remember, his Christmas card features the Mars logo on the window blinds in the library.
Homer Hickam, he's still out there. Isn't he like a dinosaur hunter now or something? I think he is.
I saw an interview with him the other day about the movie. I didn't know what he was doing, but he's... pretty much alive and well.
Yeah, he's still kicking around. He was born in 1943, as a matter of fact. So
he's not much older than me then.
No,
there you go.
Young guy. All right, you two. Thank you so much, Dr. John. It was great having you on this show.
Great having being here with you.
What great feedback.
John, stay tuned, because the best is yet to come.
Indeed, Richard will be with us when we come back with Robert Zubrin.